Welcome to Ben Behaving Dadly with me, Ben Hanlon. This is the podcast where I sit down each week with a celebrity guest and get their best parenting tips and advice, from the small little parenting hacks right up to the big stuff. Today's guest is Arlene Phillips, born in Lancashire, a choreographer for many West End and Broadway musicals, films, television, and a lot of you, pretty much the whole world, will have seen her as a judge on Strictly Come Dancing and So You Think You Can Dance. And coming up, you can still get tickets, 7th of June, she's got a home chat show with Levois at the Duchess Theatre, London, 7:30 p.m. And you can get your tickets through NIMAX Theatres. But also, apart from all of that show busy stuff, Arlene is also a mom to Alana and to Abby, and also a grandmother or a nanny, depending on what you like to call yourself, to Lila, who's 2, and Emmy, who's 4 months old. So a tiny little one.
Yeah, sweet as can be, the hugest eyes, you just love.
Arlene, big question, are you a nanny, are you grandma, are you...
I'm grandma, yeah.
Okay, fine. Yeah. So quickly, can we talk about this home chat show that you're doing the 7th of June?
Yes.
So quickly, tell us a little bit about that. It's great to hear that theatres are back opening.
Exactly. And because, you know, I haven't been in a theatre for, it's coming up to a year and a half, I decided to get back into the world of theatre by doing my own chat show. A producer came, was really interested. And I'm talking about my life, not just all the show busy things and all the, you know, video stars I've worked with. And I mean, just so many people. But also talking about life and life as a working mother.
So tell us about that, because you just mentioned something to me quickly just before we hit record. So when you first came along, Alana, what was the situation? Take us back.
It's a very interesting situation because I was married and didn't get pregnant, and the marriage broke up, and then I met someone and... And it sort of didn't last, but I discovered I was pregnant. So I was thrilled. I thought, you know, I'm ready to have a child. I have to have this child. But at the same time, I had just signed a contract for a massive Hollywood movie. So it felt like I had to make a choice.
Which film?
It was called Can't Stop the Music with the Village People, and it's won many a prize, one of the 10 worst musical films ever made. it won an award.
Yeah.
I really was struggling with choice, and I was about to give up on the film when a friend of mine who lives in America said, "What are you talking about? You've got a contract. Have you signed it?" I said, "Yes." She said, "Well, here in America, if you've signed a contract, they can't stop you taking the job because you're having a baby." So I said, "Right." She said, "Call the producer." So I spoke to the producer and I said, "I know that there's a 1 week hiatus in the middle of the film. Does that mean we're free to do whatever we want at that time?" And I said, "Yes, of course. Why? Why would you want?" I said, "Well, I need the week off. I'm going to have a baby." And instead of going, "What?" he went, "Okay, we'll do whatever we can. We'll get you a Winnebago by the lot. We'll get you a guru so you're calm and easy in the birth. We'll get you we'll bring you a nanny. We'll bring you whatever you need." And that's what happened. She was born on her due date, the first day of the hiatus in Los Angeles. I took a week off, and then it was like I then continued with the film with the baby around in my arms.
And the first year or two, did you carry on going from job to job, or did you manage to get a break at the end of that one? Or
if I'm honest, Ben, I did go from job to job. I was pretty much working nonstop, and I didn't think about it. I always had a nanny. Obviously, school was difficult, and I wasn't with, you know, for either of them, was not with them full time. And it's only now in this pandemic that I really have taken time to reflect of the many, many times I think, did I need to do that job? Mm. I've done that job, and it's an awful feeling. I'm very close to both my girls, but it is the most awful feeling as a mother to feel that in reality, you kind of abandon them to your work.
Well, that's the balance that things are going to change, and like, you know, the pandemic has changed the work-life balance. People are working from home, but that is the same struggle that I think is as relevant today as it was, you know, a few years ago. That it's that balance of I want to provide, and I don't want my kids to go without. So I need, you know, if one day I want to send them to have the ability, if I want to send them to a higher education or do something, I've got the ability that they have that opportunity, or whatever you want to use that money for. But I suppose the thing is in showbiz especially is, and I think it is quite different to, say, you know, more of a steady job, it's the momentum, isn't it? So you build up this momentum and you kind of go, well, if I get off this roller coaster, will I get back on, or will somebody just jump in? And did that ever kind of go through your head?
It did, but it was more that I was driven. I was driven to do this work. The work was my passion. My children were my passion, and I didn't do anything else. It was either work or the little ones or the children. I was kind of, I never thought of myself in the sort of pleasure world. Mm. But I think it is very, very hard for mothers who work, or mothers who have a career, or mothers whose work becomes their passion, mm, and drive, to really balance it and feel that you've done everything right.
Yeah. One thing I've got to ask you this. So during lockdown, we've been watching a lot of Netflix, watching a lot of Disney Plus, and my son, who's three, he's actually obsessed with Annie. He watches Annie a lot. So I have been watching Annie, and I remember being a kid and going around to my nan's house and have it. She had a VHS, and I would watch it a lot. So it's really gone full circle. And I've read, and I hope I'm right, you were involved in the choreography for the film Annie, right?
Yeah, I spent a year of my life making that film.
Wow.
With John Huston, flying from England to LA with John Huston on Concorde. To New York, I mean, from UK to New York, with John Huston telling me the great stories of his life, so that we could bond to go into the meetings for the film.
But the thing for me is that one of the most iconic musical scenes ever, and so we will get back onto parenting themes, but I've just got, is the Hard Knocks Life as an opening to, yeah, a musical, because seeing all of the girls coming through the building and
I not only did I create all of that, but this is a true story and I can tell it.
Go on.
On that ride to on that incredible flight on Concorde, just as we were about to land, John Huston turned to me and he said, "Oh, by the way, hey kids, hey dogs, so you're going to have to deal with them." And I like, you're about to go and make a film which is all about kids and a dog, and you hate them. And he did. So on Hard Not Life, he said to me and the first director, go ahead, do it. I've seen the storyboards. Go ahead.
Wow. So for something like that, so again, you know, there'll be parents listening to this going, getting one child to do one thing, but you had all these girls and, like you said, a dog at one point. So how long did you have with the cast to pull that, let's say, that routine together?
Oh, I have to say, Hollywood and that time making films, you had all the time in the world you needed to rehearse.
Really?
All the time, yeah, you were filming whatever you needed. It wasn't a money pressure film.
Yeah.
We were creating, you know, Easy Street. It was whatever we did, it was big. It was Hollywood side. And, you know, the audition in New York, 3,000 children auditioned in New York.
Wow.
It was unbelievable. unbelievable. We were on a studio on Fifth Avenue, and just looking out of the windows from the studio down at the hordes of people on the street.
So there'll be some parents listening to this that will, you know, they will have young daughters or sons that are all sorts of age, from 3, 5, 10, 15, that are, you know, thinking about being very talented in musical theatre or dancing. Now, I'm totally putting you on the spot here, but would you, to those parents, if somebody said, look, I've got a 12-year-old here, they're really good at dancing, they love it, they want to do it all day long, or musical theatre, is there any standard tips or advice that you could just give about that area, about what they should consider or how they should approach it?
I think the important thing is that the kid has to want to do it. Mm. They have to want to. Don't pretend and fudge around that it's not you that's pushing. You know when a kid wants to do something, they'll go off to their bedroom and practice for hours on their own in a solitary room. Mm. It's like, I know for me, there was nothing else in my life. I wanted to do this. Mm. Nothing could have stopped me. But that balance of me, it was me pushing my parents to find the money for it. Mm. You just have to be careful that it truly is coming from the desires of the child, and you have to discover that. Mm. Because it's so easy to guide your kid to think that they want to do something when it is you, because they want to please you. The truth is, your kids want to please you. But you'll know as a parent, you have to look. And you say, you know, let's take a term off. You know what? Let's not dance next term. Let's not act or sing. Just take a term. And if they absolutely are destroyed, you will know that it's something they want. And then you give them all the help you can.
Wow, I never thought about that. Just, yeah, as a slight, you know, say, to know, especially as they get to that mid-teens or late teens, which is that time where they can kind of go either way. Like you say, and go, yeah, there's other things I'm considering now. Yeah,
and
time
it doesn't
off.
Matter if they're good. And it doesn't matter if the teacher says, but he's brilliant, she's brilliant. You know, they can't give up. Give them a break. If they want it, they'll come back to it. Mm. Because everybody manipulates a clever, brilliant child. This child could be a ballerina. This child, you know, you do as a teacher. You see talent and you want to bring that talent on and expose them, but they need to have that break to understand it has to come from there. There are so many people in show business of every form. Don't push somebody into it if their heart's not in it.
When you see younger kids as part of casts or musicals or from a dance side, is there anything that you see in certain kids that time and time again, like a slight star quality or something that you can spot as an expert and going, there's some potential there?
Yeah, you spot kids who are true storytellers. Their instinct is extraordinary. So if you let's say, give everybody an improvisation and throw out 10 characters and everybody can choose and just don't tell what character you are, but just come and we're going to put some music on and you're just going to play that character. And you are shocked how they can just transform like a chameleon. They can just transform in that character. Those are the extraordinary kids that have this talent, this gift. And there are a lot of little kids, young kids in show business, theatre school. And what you should... They may be talented, but what you're seeing is a sort of a real, I don't like it, fake, false, over the top, you know, this kind of manipulated showbiz. I love those talents where they just give of themselves.
When you say manipulate, is it because it's almost like an impersonation? So it's kind of they've seen and they've repeated. Yeah. But they're doing that very well.
Yeah. And also, you know, particularly with, you do want kids that can hear, you know, with great ears, and they can hear something and they can just make themselves sound like whoever they want to sound like. Mm. But that is coming from the kids. There's the that real sort of false form of performance is very hard to get rid of as they get older. And particularly now, you know, we don't want actors to act, or, you know, we don't want showbiz with fake smiles. You know, that was the sort of the 70s. Yeah. We now want true performances, and those fake smiles are very hard to get rid of.
Yeah, we want everything to be as raw as it can be, don't we now?
As honest. It's about honesty.
Right, well, let's tell you what, I know you've come with some tips, and I've derailed the conversation. But okay, so what's your first tip or advice for us then, Arlene?
Oh, always hug your children. There is nothing like a hug. And the most extraordinary thing is, when you ask people what do they miss most in the pandemic, it's someone to wrap their arms around you. And my mother passed away when I was 15. And it was really, really hard. And most of all, I missed her putting my arms around her arms around me. Because if I'd had a bad day at school or come bottom of the class, and in my day, everything was a test. And I came bottom of the class for art. You know, I could just go home and she could put her arms around me, and then it didn't matter anymore.
Wow, that's really nice. And you're right, you're exactly right. This last year, that's the thing that, it's funny, isn't it? Because I think the last year, people have started to realise the things that they think they needed in their lives weren't as important. You know, the bells, the whistles.
Yeah.
But actually go, no, do you know what? I just want to sit with somebody and have a conversation and have a, you know, and touch them, hug them, and
close to someone and just say, hug goodbye or hello. Yeah. And that might have come from our lives. Who knows? But with your kids, you always can. So do. Mm.
Okay, lovely. Great tip. Next one, when you're ready.
Try not to lose your temper.
Okay.
Now, I am easy to lose my temper. It will just spring out of nowhere. And the other weird thing is, you know, my dad had a really bad temper, and I vowed that's one thing I will never have with my children. Well, let me just tell you, Ben, it's there somewhere in quick to lose your temper. It's your anger. The times I've just lost it with, you know, both my daughters, and really, really regret it, because was there another way? Now, I don't actually agree also spending 2 hours sort of manipulating and trying to discuss what that moment is, because no one has time for that. But I do think there's a way, and I discovered, I think the way is total distraction.
Okay.
Don't lose your temper. Distract from the tantrum. Bring something else in that is it totally idiotic. Put a party hat on. Do something that's ridiculous, or instead of losing your temper, just start to be funny. I never thought about that before until, you know, I'll see it with my granddaughter.
It's do you know what? My mom does it when we, and I notice her doing it, and I envy her for it, because it's almost like not giving it oxygen, isn't it? If you take the oxygen away, then it will just dimmer down, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So there's this thing, I was reading this thing that said, a lot of the time we get angry because we're annoyed that they're not following our instructions.
Mm-hmm.
So we're annoyed that they are not, that we are not dominating them, essentially. You know, subconsciously, it's like, well, hold on, I'm in charge. Whatever I say, you must do. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they don't want to play ball. And we get annoyed, not because of the actual action they're doing, but because, well, you're disobeying me. And once you start letting that go and go, do you know what? It doesn't really matter if they, it matters in general if they kind of listen to you. But once you take that out of the equation, like you say, you go, okay, I'll just distract them and change the subject and not get annoyed that I'm not being listened to.
It's so true.
So when you talk about temper, though, I've got to ask you this. So obviously being a top choreographer, so I was on Dancing on Ice. I mention it occasionally, every now and again. But that was my first ever slight glimpse into the world of dancing choreography. Not a thing I've done. So watching a choreographer teacher run a class, they're very... it's like being in the military, isn't it? You guys are... You're disciplined... You've got authority.
Focused.
Yeah, it's like, I almost liken it to like a head chef in a restaurant. It's that you're running the ship. So as a teacher, what are you, were you, did you, do you have to be a strict and dominant teacher, or what's your style in that?
Well, it's very interesting. I mean, I've done full circle because I was brought up with very strict teachers. Yeah. So I was really, really demanding, demanding on my dancers, demanding on, you know, when I had my dance group called Hot Gossip, so demanding on them. And I really, you know, everybody had to listen, look, watch, do as I wanted. But certainly from the moment that Alana was born, something inside me kind of in my work softened the approach. Yeah, my approach to teaching changed. Somehow another life brought me, I guess, another life, another way. And yes, I was tough, but not quite in the same way. Not quite in the same demands, because I started to realize that everybody, you hire somebody for a job and they do a great audition, but then you may be giving them things that actually they genuinely are struggling with. So realize it instead of demanding all the time, and find a way to help them not struggle and give you what you want, which I really hadn't thought about prior to having Alana.
Well, I suppose it's that thing of you've gone, well, I've gotten to this level because I've been taught like this. So I'm going to teach you like this so that you can get up to this level, is the mindset, right? But then when you start, like say, dealing with other people, you go, oh, these people that I'm living with now, my daughters, I see they actually react better to a different, or also everybody's different. So the same approach isn't going to work for everyone, is it?
Exactly. And I think that's it. Treat everyone as an individual, not this, you know, you're in ballet, you're in a, you know, you're on the bar one after the other, you know, we're not all the same. They're not all the same. They have different gifts even in the way they move. So just working to appreciate that more.
Well, right. Ready for your next tip?
Yes. What's my next tip? My next tip is don't overindulge. You let your kids have everything they want and you never say no in life. And it doesn't matter whether they're, it doesn't have to be that they're expensive gifts, but if it's all yes, 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 I don't think that they step into adulthood with the same understanding. I mean, my goodness, look at our government, you know, the haves.
Yeah.
Many of them.
Yeah.
They don't understand what it's like to not have. And it does no harm to not have. And I think that's really, really important to say no.
We had a conversation this morning, me and my wife. So my son's three, my daughter's coming up to two. And it's about silly, just the simplest thing of taking them to the toy shop. And I put my foot down and said, we've got to stop taking them to the toy shop, because every time they go out now, I don't know if you're doing it as a grandma as well, you know, you do this thing where you go, oh, should we just get them something? We'll just get them. And every time they go out, they start to expect, oh, well, I should have a treat. I should have this. I should have that. And I'm already thinking this is the small version of that. And then it will get a little bit bigger and a bit bigger and a bit bigger. But yeah, I'm understanding already what you're saying there.
It's so true, because what I did with both my girls, and it was a massive mistake, and it was the guilt of being away. Every time I came back, and sometimes, like, I went to make an Aretha Franklin video in Detroit for 2 days, and I came back with presents. Doesn't matter where I was, everywhere I went, I traveled back always with a gift. It's not good, because you expect gifts and presents and toys, and those things become part of that thing in your brain, the smiling bit in your brain. But you have to understand, you also have to cope with the less than, no than. We have to wave at the toy shop.
Well, do you know what? The best thing I think that's happened about this whole pandemic is that I liken it to we've all of us have been overstimulated, right? So you can go and see, you can go to the fanciest restaurants every day of the week in London. You can go to this bar, you can go to this theatre show and this show and shop here, and the kids can do that. And we've all got this everything. So we always have to, all of us have to be doing something all the time so that we don't feel bored or we have to be stimulated. We have to go and get a coffee. We have to go and do this. And then all of that went away overnight and it almost reset us. So now you could do nothing. So now with our kids, we had to find a way of making going to the park fun, as fun as it can be. And now, me and my son will play games in the woods because we have to, because there's nothing else to do. And I think that, my wife, I mean, she did really well over lockdown. She would sit the night before cutting up toilet rolls and making crafts and things like that. But the idea there is, you don't, with especially with young kids, you don't need to be doing loads and loads. You can make the simplest of things entertaining. Yeah. You don't need to keep stimulating all the time, you know?
That's right. And, like I grew up, we would go to the Bluebell Woods, or we would, there weren't things all the time. There weren't, just having the TV on. I mean, there's so much for kids now. Mm. So much is good. They learn so much, so young, and it's quite extraordinary. But they've got to understand also that life isn't one big TV screen.
Go on. Are you ready for your next one?
Yeah. I want to say that one of the most important things in life, I think, are picnics.
Picnics?
Picnics.
Okay.
Picnic blanket and, a basket of food or whatever, out on the grass. They are so important. They're family smile days.
Okay.
What's in the picnic basket? Who's what? Oh, I don't like egg. Oh, the cheese. It's just lovely. It's where a family of all ages can get together and just sit and look up at the sky, whether it's aeroplanes or there's a kite or there's birds flying. There's so much that you can get out of that. Sitting in the open air. But
Arlene, I can't imagine you doing a picnic by half. I'd imagine you've got a nice hamper. You got a nice basket going on.
No. It's just tuck everything in a rucksack, put a freezer bag in, keeps it cold. And just know picnics have got to be where you can just dig in and have what you want. And it has to be fun. It's not posh. Not a posh picnic.
Nice.
It's like glamping. No, go in a tent. Make it real.
Okay. I'll start with a picnic and we'll see how we go.
Have the picnic.
Right. I think it's your last tip and then I've got some closing questions.
Okay.
Go on.
My last tip is don't ask your children to walk like military soldiers swinging their arms and marching.
I haven't asked my children. What's this?
You see people walking along and the kids, going to school, with sometimes more with the dads than with the mums. They're not allowed to dawdle it. Come on.
Right, yeah.
Sometimes you just want to dawdle. Sometimes you want to look at the big red bus or the flowers growing over somebody's garden. Yeah. So when you're walking, just make sure it's always a pleasure. Don't leave for school late. Just think about walking to school and making it a good time.
Well, that brings me on to a few questions we always kind of end with. When the day isn't going to plan, so sometimes things just aren't happening, you can feel the mood shifting and you think, this is dragging me down here. What is the thing that you do, an activity or something in your mind that you do or say to yourself that kind of resets yourself back into a good mood? Is there anything in particular you've got?
Music.
Really?
Music can alter my mood so completely and so instantly. Really? Whether it's, putting on Bruno Mars and just going, just listen, feel the music inside you.
Yeah.
Or even a piece of classical music or semi-classical or just something to listen to it and listen to it loud, because it can just change so quickly the way you feel. It can for me.
Mm.
Like it just invades you. I use music very much since the pandemic to help me feel the way I need to feel for that moment.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think there was some research done that echoes exactly. I was hearing about it on the news the other day. It was saying exactly that people have been listening to music more than ever in the last year. And mm-hmm. specifically for that, because they can't see their loved ones. They can't hug their loved ones. They can't do anything. And music was the way for them to go, right, it's Friday night. Let's feel like it's the weekend. Let's feel like we're going to have a good day, or, you know, and that kind of thing.
Yeah. And music's so important. You know, people say, oh, no, I can't dance. And I say, you know, put your pods in and listen to music and walk. And you watch, and people start to walk in time. And being able to walk in time is one step away from dancing.
Yeah.
People don't realize that music affects them. It affects the rhythm, the beat of your heart.
Wow. And tell you what, Arlene, this has been great. Honestly, we've covered loads there. I think it's been such a great chat, but we always finish on the very, very final question. Are you ready for the last question?
Yeah.
Okay. So, Arlene, if you could go back in time to the day before you became a parent, what advice would you give yourself?
I would have told myself that your children are the most precious things in life. Mm. So you should probably have given them more time.
Arlene, thank you very, very much. Thank you.
Pleasure.
Great. Oh, and I will say as well, just to remember, 7th of June, Arlene's show at the Duchess Theatre, London, 7:30 p.m. Tickets are available through NIMAX Theatres as well. So there we go, another episode of Ben Behaving Dadly. Hopefully you enjoyed it. And you do us a favour, could you hit the subscribe button? That would be amazing. And also possibly leave us a review because that really, really makes a difference. And also, I'm getting very professional now. I've got myself an email address for this and all sorts. It's info@benbehavingdadly.com. And here's the plan, right? If you've got a hack or a tip or any advice, email it over and I might throw it on the pod. Or also, if you're struggling with some sort of problem and you want me to put it to a celebrity guest, let me know. info@benbehavingdadly.com. Also, you can find me on all socials @benhanlon. See you next week.